It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Reinforcements for the UN peacekeeping mission to Central African Republic. President Obama reportedly prepared to step up U.S. efforts to combat Ebola. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. In Central African Republic, the African-led peacekeeping force has transferred authority to the UN mission in CAR, known as MINUSCA, as it strives to restore order to the landlocked country plagued by sectarian violence for the past 18 months. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Sunday urged all sides to put an immediate end to fighting and advance a political transition. UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ladsou says one of the missions of the force is protecting its fragile economy from pillage by rival militia groups.
We are working with the World Bank and with others to eventually make sure that, yes, those legitimate wealth of the Central African Republic does not benefit only to armed groups, spoilers, traffickers of all sorts. This is one of the top priorities of the mission.
Currently, the UN mission comprises 6,500 soldiers and about 1,000 police. The Security Council authorized a force of up to 12,000 through next April. A transitional government headed by Catherine Samba-Panza has overseen a ceasefire among rival militia, but periodic violence persists. In Washington, U.S. spokesperson Marie Harf confirmed reports the U.S. is preparing to reopen its embassy in Bangui.
Approximately 20 U.S. Armed Forces personnel have deployed to CAR to support the resumption of these activities. They were deployed along with U.S. Department of State diplomatic security personnel for the purpose of protecting our embassy personnel and property. For security reasons, don't have additional details to share about the exact timing of when it will be reopening.
The mission was closed in late 2012. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal reports President Obama will outline further efforts to combat the Ebola epidemic. This is VOA News. The Wall Street Journal reports the effort at fighting Ebola will cost another $88 million above the $100 million that the U.S. has already provided in assistance involving U.S. military forces. The U.S. is planning a 25-bed field hospital in Liberia for infected healthcare workers. The U.S. ambassador said Washington will train Liberian security forces in isolation operations. Sunday, Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf fired 10 senior officials for failing to heed last month's warning to return to the country from overseas travel to help in the government's fight against Ebola that has killed more than 1,100 Liberians. The UN Children's Fund says the Ebola virus is having a devastating impact on children in Liberia. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UNICEF Crisis Communications Chief Sarah Crowe is currently on a mission in Liberia. Speaking by telephone from the capital, Monrovia, she tells journalists in Geneva the impact of the Ebola crisis upon children is very grave.
Children are seeing their family members and relatives taken away by people in effectively astronaut suits and looking like crop sprayers. And the effect of this is deeply distressing for children. Children who have been exposed to the virus are facing deep stigma, and nobody wants to take them on because there's this terrible psychosis of fear around the Ebola virus.
Many children have lost one or two parents to this disease. Crowe says UNICEF is looking for innovative ways to give orphaned and other Ebola-affected children the care, nurture, and attention they need. One method, she says, is to have people who have survived Ebola look out for these children during the critical 21-day incubation period. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A UN military vehicle struck a landmine in the Kidal region of northern Mali Sunday, killing a Chadian peacekeeper and wounding four others. A similar blast killed four UN peacekeepers September 2nd. Meanwhile, the French press agency reports that Malian separatists have agreed on Sunday to speak with a single voice during peace talks in Algiers with Bamako on ending the violence that was sparked by a military coup in 2012. Ugandan police on Sunday said they arrested 19 suspects linked to the Somali-based militant group Al-Shabaab for allegedly planning bombing attacks. The weekend raids came after Ugandan forces fighting the Islamist group in Somalia reportedly tipped off U.S. forces on the whereabouts of al-Shabaab leader Ahmed Gudani. Ugandan police say they seized a substantial number of explosives as well as suicide vests. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone mourns the death of its fourth doctor from Ebola.
This is very, very sad news for the government and for the country as a whole. The last thing the government really wanted was to lose another doctor.
Sidi Yaya Tunis, Director of Communications for the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation. We'll look at the impact of airlines' flights cut to West Africa on the fight against Ebola. A human rights advocate says President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's sacking of some government officials is a shifting of responsibility, and the United Nations force is being deployed today in the Central African Republic.
On top of the African troops of MISCA, we have secured a number of other contributions, some from Africa, but also some from other parts of the world.
Hervé Lassus is the United Nations Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations. The DRC government denies meddling with the country's constitution, and South Sudan's president seeks a meeting with President Omar al-Bashir. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Sierra Leone government says the death of Dr. Olivette Bock, the fourth Sierra Leone doctor to die from Ebola, will impact greatly the government's effort to contain the virus. Dr. Bock, head of the Lomley Hospital in Freetown, died on Sunday, just 5 days after she tested positive. Sidi Yaya Tunis, Director of Information and Communication for the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation, tells me the government tried to transfer Dr. Bock abroad, but the effort did not materialize.
It is a very, very sad news for the government and for the country as a whole. The last thing the government really wanted was to lose another doctor. When we heard the news that Dr. Olivette Bock has tested positive for Ebola, the government right away started putting arrangements in place to get her out of the country for treatment. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. She passed on this morning.
You said that the government started to make arrangements to get her out of the country. Who did the government contact, and why did it not happen?
Well, I couldn't say why it did not happen, but the government officially wrote to the WHO here in Sierra Leone because, as you know, two doctors from the World Health Organization working in Kailan tested positive for Ebola, and they were both flown out of the country. So the government probably wanted to use the same avenue that the WHO used to fly those two doctors out of the country for Dr. Bock. So official letter was written to WHO, but of course we did not get a response quick enough for her to be taken out of the country until she passed.
What does this do, the death of this doctor, to your country's entire effort to fight this Ebola virus?
It is challenging in the sense that it is going to demotivate our healthcare workers for sure. As you know, Dr. Bock is the fourth doctor that have tested positive for Ebola in Sierra Leone, and she is the fourth doctor that we have lost as far as Sierra Leonean doctors are concerned. And she happens to be the first female doctor that have tested positive and that we have lost in this fight. It is going to be a challenge for us. You know, we have been struggling to keeping our healthcare workers motivated to continue to work, to continue to attend to health facilities across the country.
Tunis, did the government of Sierra Leone have the means or the money to transport Dr. Bock out of the country?
It wasn't more about money, because the government would have paid whatever money that could have been involved in getting her out of the country. I think it was more of the other issues, arrangement as far as hospitals in Germany that was ready to accept her, and even the arrangement with the airline that could have flown her out of the country. It wasn't more about money. The government was ready to pay whatever it would have costed us to get her out of this country.
Sidi Yaya Tunis is Director of Information and Communication for the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. The Ebola crisis in West Africa has closed borders and international airlines have cut flights to the area. But as Christian Roby reports from Dakar, such measures aimed at controlling the outbreak also are delaying the delivery of humanitarian aid.
Senegal and Ivory Coast have closed their airports to planes coming from Ebola-affected countries, and many airlines have cut services to the capitals of Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. The World Health Organization says this is not the answer to containing Ebola, since the risk of transmitting the disease during a flight is quite low. The virus cannot be transferred from one person to another through the air by coughing, for example, but only from contact with blood or other body fluids. Still, the airlines have chosen to cut their flights. Alassane Senghor, Africa Director for the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, says his organization cannot get staff into and out of affected countries.
It's really hampering efforts. The conditions in those countries, the closure of the borders and all these things, is not helping. So we try to use some creative ways by driving by road, which is costly, takes time, and of course, it doesn't help anybody.
Humanitarian agencies criticized Senegal when it closed Dakar Airport to UN flights last month. The government here subsequently announced it will open a humanitarian corridor, but details have not yet been released. The West African aviation market has expanded rapidly in the past 5 years, and there are concerns that travel bans will reverse that growth. Companies like Kenya Airways, Eric Air, and Air Cote d'Ivoire have cut dozens of flights each week since the beginning of August. The International Air Transport Association says flights to Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea account for just 3% of annual African carrier revenues. But an IATA spokesman on Africa, Chris Goder, says lost revenue could skyrocket if the virus continues to spread. An aviation analysis company, OAG, measures flights in terms of available seats. During the first 2 weeks of August, Banjul-based carrier Gambia Bird flew nearly 6,000 seats to and from Freetown and Monrovia, OAG says. But then Gambia Bird canceled all flights from mid-August through the end of September. British Airways has canceled more than 4,000 seats to these destinations through the end of the year. Liberia's finance minister, Amara Kona, says the flight shutdowns are isolating the country and crippling the economy. At a meeting earlier this week, the African Union called for an end to travel restrictions on the Ebola-affected countries. Kristen Roby for VOA News, Dakar.
A Liberian human rights campaigner says the dismissal of 10 government officials by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is shifting of responsibility for the government's failure to contain the deadly Ebola outbreak. President Sirleaf, over the weekend, sacked the 10 officials, mostly assistant ministers, for defying her order to return to the country from abroad and help with the Ebola outbreak. A government statement said the 10 show insensitivity to what it calls the country's national tragedy and disregard for authority. But Vandela Patrick, National Director of Liberia Campaigners for Change, says President Sirleaf failed to listen to the advice of some Liberians who wanted her to act immediately when Ebola first entered the country through the Guinea-Liberian border.
As a matter of fact, when the Ebola started in Lofa County, several officials of government were in the country, and where politicians and eminent citizens suggested to this president that there was a need for her to immediately tackle the situation in Lofa. She didn't do it. You have her officials of government insulting eminent people in this country. Now that Ebola is in the city, many persons are afraid to fight this Ebola. People are dying, and the first law of nature is self-preservation. I'm very sure the reason some of those general ministers have refused to return to Liberia is because they do not want to lose their lives. We see this, the sacking of the junior ministers, as a clear manifestation that Madame Sirleaf also needs to step down. Because if you sack your officials of government, that they are refusing to fight Ebola, and whereas you as a president also refuse to listen to your critics, then we see that also as a wrongful act against the Liberian people.
I don't think it's fair for you to say that the president or the government did not act when Ebola came about. The government has taken action. It has closed schools. It has also told government officials that they need to take a little vacation, and has also quarantined some areas to control the spread of this virus.
Mr. Bote, let me be very emphatic. This government gave visa to Ebola to enter Liberia. As a matter of fact, When there were five deaths in Lofa County, many eminent persons in Liberia, including politicians, specifically the Democratic Party, they suggested to the Liberian leader that there was a need to close the border. Their government did not listen. In fact, the press secretary to the president insulted some of those that were suggesting to the president to close the border. They didn't listen until the Ebola finally arrived in the capital city. Even when they arrived, they constituted a task force that was headed by the coonies of this government. They spent $5 million. The $5 million has even resulted to the increase in the death rate in the fight against Ebola. We cannot say that this government is serious. A leader that is willing to listen will always create a platform where people will forget. But Manasseli cannot listen. If this person has listened, I am saying those who have lost their lives, they will not have died.
Vandalak Patricks is the National Director of Liberia Campaigners for Change. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. VOA made numerous attempts to reach either the Liberian Minister of Information or President Sirleaf's press secretary, but to no avail. It is Monday morning, September the 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16:30 past the hour. The Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister says he is unaware of an alleged attempt by the government to remove term limits in the constitution that would pave the way for President Joseph Kabila to run for a third term. President Kabila's second term expires in 2016. Lambert Mende tells reporter Peter Clotty that the government plans to propose amendments to some provisions in the constitution, but not to remove term limits.
What they are saying is not true. In fact, yesterday we had two demonstrations in Kinshasa at the same area. So the police advised that the second one, those who came after the first one, postponed their demonstration so that the police could be able to care for the first demonstration. So this was said to them by local authorities. They didn't accept to abide by this order of the police, and 50 of them tried to come in, and the police dispersed them. 8 resisted and were arrested, and they were just identified for 45 minutes in the police custody and then released. So at 4-5 p.m. we had nobody in custody. Everybody were free, and we didn't have any complaints from them.
One of their concerns is the opposition leader Jean-Bertrand Ewanga, who has been jailed for a year, but they're saying that he has the freedom of speech as guaranteed by the Constitution, and that is why they are protesting. What do you say to that?
We are not used to comment the decisions that are made by the judiciary in Congo. It is forbidden by the law. This is a decision from the judiciary. It is not a case of debate. The judiciary have spoken. Politicians must remain silent.
One of the concerns of the opposition is that the ruling party, which you belong to, appear to want to change or amend the constitution to allow the president to run for a third term. Is the president going to run for a third term? Has a decision been made about that?
I'm not aware of an initiative that have been taken till we are talking here to change these articles that are preventing the president to run for a third time. I'm not aware. It is just opposition speaking just to discredit our political group and discredit the president. We know that we have introduced an initiative for other provision of the constitution, but not that one. So I don't see what we are discussing of.
So basically, the government allows them to demonstrate when they coordinate with the police and that they will not be disturbed. Is that correct?
It is a must. And even in America, it is a must. You can't demonstrate without coordinating with the police. And you know that it is like that everywhere in the world. The message is clear. One, we have a regime of freedom of demonstration. They must know that they are free to demonstrate. Two, they must coordinate with local authorities so that something is done to prevent any disorder. That is what is in the provision of law, that they should not go and challenge the public order.
Lamba Mende is Congo's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. The African-led peacekeeping force in the Central African Republic, known as MISCA, will today, Monday, transfer authority to the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission, that is known as MINUSCA. Only 7,500 of the nearly 12,000 troops will be on hand. Hervé Lassouze, the United Nations Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, explains the difficulties of putting together a UN peacekeeping force.
It's a constant difficulty because, as you know, the United Nations don't have their own troops. We have to rely on those countries, member states, who contribute either military or police. And, of course, the force generation process is not one that works instantly. On top of that, you have the very real logistical difficulties here in this country, which is landlocked, which is far from the sea, and of course it is even more complicated than in other places. This being said, on top of the African troops of MISCA, the quasi-totality of which we are rehatting under Blue Helmet, we have secured a number of other contributions. Some from Africa, but also some from other parts of the world. We have already a Moroccan battalion that is already fully deployed. We have the advance parties, and in not in small numbers, of new battalions from Bangladesh, from Pakistan. Zambia is also going to join. We have helicopters coming from Sri Lanka. So we already have all the promises, the commitments by those countries, and that includes also police units, police officers. So it's a matter of time, but not very long time. I believe that we will be in the vicinity of full deployment in just a few months.
Hervé Lassouze is the United Nations Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations. He spoke with reporter Bagassi Koura of VOA's French 2 Africa Service in the Central African Republic capital of Bangui. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has officially written to Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir seeking a meeting to deepen bilateral relations and security cooperation. South Sudan presidential spokesman Atene Bwek Atene tells reporter Peter Clotty that the meeting between the two neighboring heads of state is likely to be held at the end of the month following the United Nations General Assembly in New York.
The truth of the matter is that President Salva Kiir did request a meeting through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to request that meeting.
What does your president want to talk to President Bashir about?
Sudan and South Sudan has a number of issues that, you know, need the two head of state to discuss. One of the fundamental issues is the cooperation agreements that were signed between the Sudan and the Republic of South Sudan on the 27th of September 2012. The other thing is our outstanding issue of BIA. The BIA remains, case remains unresolved, and the matter has been referred to the two head of state, so it is incumbent upon the two presidents to seek to make a really convenient time so that they discuss the outstanding issues. President Bashir and President Salva Kiir has a lot to discuss.
What about the issues of supporting of the rebels? Because Sudan has categorically denied supporting the rebels fighting your government, but then your government appears to say that Sudan still has some ties with the rebel movement. Will Salva Kiir, in this case, your president, ask him to sever ties, as reports seem to suggest?
Well, if there is any issue that requires the Republic of South Sudan to raise complaint against Khartoum on the issue of supporting the rebels, that will be addressed by the two presidents. But up to now, South Sudan's government has not yet launched any official complaint against Khartoum. If Khartoum is actually training the rebels, it will be easy to know because we have a vast border between ourselves, more than 2,000 kilometers. And if the rebels are coming to attack South Sudan from northern neighbor, we will automatically know that, you know, they are coming from Khartoum. But up to this time, we have not launched any official complaint against Khartoum or any official accusation against Khartoum. So there is still room for the two presidents to see to address the matters of the mutual interest between the two countries.
So when do you think the meeting will occur, specifically because the UN General Assembly is just around the corner, and I anticipate that President Salva Kiir will be participating, although it is unclear if President Bashir would also be at the UN General Assembly in New York.
I would confirm the fact that if this meeting is to be scheduled by the Sudan government or next week, then the president will not be available because President Salva Kiir will be participating in the United Nations General Assembly in New York. If President Bashir is traveling to New York, then they can meet on the site in New York. In any case, if President Bashir doesn't want to go to UN General Assembly, then the meeting should take place any other time after the return of President Salva Kiir from America, sometime at the end of this month.
Attorney Wek Attorney is South Sudan's presidential spokesman. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Juba. Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics at the IAAF Continental Cup in Marrakech, Morocco. Egypt's Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed, Botswana's Nigel Amos, Kenyan Caleb Mwangangi Ndiku, and Ethiopian Almaz Ayana triumphed in men's javelin 800 meters, 3000 meters, and women's 5000 meters, respectively, on Sunday. The African men clinched the gold medal in the 4x400 meter relay. South African Cornell Fredericks, Djibouti's Ayanle Suleiman, Kenyan's Isaiah Kiplangat Koech, and Jairus Kipchoge Berech were victorious in men's 400 meter hurdles, 1500 meters, 5000 meters, and 3000 meter steeplechase, respectively. Other gold medals included Ethiopian Genzebe Dibaba and Kenyan Yunus Sum in women's 3000 meters and 800 meters, respectively. At the end of the 2-day contest, Europe amassed 447.5 points from the 40 events to top the chart. The Americas were second with 390 points, Africa third with 339, while the Asian Pacific team scored 257.5 points. In rugby news, African champions South Africa, Fiji, France, and China qualified for the 2014-2015 IRB Women's Sevens World Series. They were semi-finalists in the 12-nation qualifier in Hong Kong, China, on Saturday. Fiji beat France 24-19 in the final, while China outplayed South Africa 12-7 in the bronze medal playoff. Japan placed fifth, followed by Brazil, Netherlands, Portugal, Hong Kong, Argentina, Kenya, and Mexico. In football, hosts Gabon pipped Nigeria 2-1 as Guinea edged Togo 1-0 in Orange African Under-17 Championship qualifiers on Sunday. Earlier on, Angola held defending champions Ivory to a 1-1 draw. Mali beat Tunisia 2-0. South Africa edged Egypt 2-1. Ghana upset hosts Cameroon 2-1. And Zambia dismissed Uganda 2-0. Finally, in motorsports, Kenyan Baldev Chaga, navigated by Ravi Soni, retained his KCB Safari Rally title when the 3-day contest ended in Nanyuki, Central Kenya. The event is the 8th leg in the Africa Rally Championship Series. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Ebola has taken the life of a fourth doctor in Sierra Leone who was dedicated to fighting the disease. And that is it for this Monday, September 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very productive week.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, African leaders countrywide have long sought a solution to the so-called brain drain, losing their brightest young minds to jobs in the West or Asia. Now, many talented African students who study abroad are finding opportunities to apply their skills at home. We'll examine a new trend among Africa's top intellectual talent. That's next time on VOA Africa. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, Please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.